right, welcome back to your new favorite radio show. It's the Kaufman Show. That's right, Jay. It's your new favorite radio show. It's about damn time
that you made it. It's always been my favorite radio show.
Well, good. Good. Because you're a big part of it.
Yeah.
You're an integral.
Which is why self-preservation is why it is my favorite radio show.
Self-preservation is why this is your favorite radio show?
Yes. The more people like it, the more we stay on the air.
How are you, man?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm great. Had a wonderful week. Recharged the batteries this weekend, ready to go on what is going to be a very big show tonight. And I think we should probably get right to it.
Okay.
If you're all right with that.
Let's do it, man.
All right. Did you see the Lance Armstrong interview?
I saw some of it, yes. It was hard to get through.
Well, I mean, he wasn't jumping on the couch or anything, but...
No, it was still hard to get through. It was equally as cringy as Tom Cruise jumping on a couch. It's just as cringy.
I can't remember the last time I watched Oprah interview somebody. Like,
I think it was Michael Jackson for me.
Oh, you know what? That's actually a very good call.
It might be that
one. Yeah, as far as sit down, 2 hour... I was riveted by it. I thought it was just
really,
fascinating television.
I couldn't get through it.
I thought Oprah... And we'll get into this with Sports Illustrated's Richard Deitch in a few minutes, but I thought that Oprah really held her own, and I thought she did a great job of maintaining silence when silence was necessary to make Armstrong answer. Even if the answers weren't necessarily what we wanted to hear, I think he gave very truthful in his own mind answers, and I thought it made for a very compelling two nights of television, much more so than Hockey Night in Canada, let's say.
Okay.
Well, I don't know. That Saturday's game didn't... it was game one of the exhibition season, right?
Yeah, wasn't the prettiest of games, that's for sure.
It'll be a while before we see pretty games.
No, I'm sure.
It'll be a long while before the...
And there's already a bunch of guys going down to injuries. I can already see it happening.
Well, yeah, that was the...
I was watching that Columbus-Detroit game tonight. There were guys falling all over the place. They've had it already.
Well, they're gassed.
Yeah, they're gassed, and, you know, they're not stretched out, and that's what happens.
That excitement that I had for the National Hockey League season kind of dissipated a bit after Saturday's game, and I hope to get it back, but frankly, without PK... Without signing P.K. Subban, this is going to be a very difficult season for the Montreal Canadiens.
Yes, it is.
And that's a tough thing to wrap your head around if you've been waiting for hockey all year. Because, frankly, if you've been waiting for the Habs to start, it's because you're excited to see P.K. play.
Reminds me of Tim Raines, 1987. Doesn't it remind you of that?
That's interesting. I don't know if there's the collusion aspect of it.
There's no collusion aspect. It's just a guy who wants more money and hasn't started playing yet, so... Yeah, it kind of reminds me. And then when he comes back, he'll be forgiven, and as long as he plays well. Of course, he might not hit for the cycle in his first game back or something like that.
It sounds like you and I are on different sides of this if you think he'll be forgiven. I don't think
absolutely.
He has anything to be forgiven for.
No, this is Montreal. We forgive everything in hockey.
But, Jay, I don't think he has anything to be forgiven for.
No, people. I could already see that people are a little bit angry with him about holding out on his contract
really?
And so on. Everybody's mad about that. They just went through an entire... They just lost half a season.
That's right.
Because people were holding out because of money.
Yep.
And now it's back, and our star is holding out because of money. So I can understand why people are a little bit pissed about that.
I don't look at it that way.
I don't look at it that way either.
The owners and management not being able to get their ish together.
Yeah.
And it's very frustrating.
Yeah.
If I'm a hockey fan, and I am, then I look at this situation and I say, why was there a lockout?
Right.
If you still can't sign your best player.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying when I'm picking up from the common man in the street, that's how they feel about it. Just get it signed or whatever, agree to your deal, and get on the ice and help us out because it ain't looking good right now.
Want to talk about one more thing before we go to break.
Please.
And we have a huge show tonight. Richard Deitch from Sports Illustrated makes his third triumphant return to the Kaufman Show.
Always brings it.
We'll discuss Lance Armstrong and the Manti Te'o story, which is just... insane. I look forward to getting into that with you and with the rest of our audience. Also on the show tonight, the first ever NFLer on the Kaufman Show. We speak with Thomas Jones, a 12-year veteran of the National Football League, who last week announced that he'll be donating his brain to science to study the effects of CTE after he passes away. This guy took a lot of hits in 12 seasons in the National Football League.
Right.
He amassed over 10,000 rushing yards in his career. Puts him in the top 25 running backs of all time for yards gained. And a fascinating person, and I think you'll all enjoy that interview very much. So before we go to break, you said you saw a little bit of Oprah. Did you see any of the inauguration this afternoon?
Yes, another 15 minutes I'll never get back.
Only 15, you're lucky.
That's about all I could take.
I've never missed an inauguration. For as long as I can remember, I've never missed one.
What a colossal waste of resources.
You know what? I like watching the president get out of the limo and walk through the streets, walk down Pennsylvania Avenue and the cheering crowds. I think that's a really cool scene. And I have vivid memories of inaugurations past where they talk. Sorry, where they don't talk. On CNN, I don't know if you watch what channel you watched on, but I watched CNN. On CNN. What's up with journalists waving to the president, man? Can I just ask that? Like, I've got my mic and I'm standing on the corner of Pennsylvania and whatever Avenue D or something, and here comes the president around the corner, and now I'm going to wave to the president. Hi, Mr. President.
Yeah.
Oh, I can see in the limo now, Wolf. I can see right in the limo. He is fixing his jacket. I can see that his white teeth and that big radiant smile that the president has.
Yes, and going on half an hour about his wife's dress.
It was enough to make you want to switch to the Charbonneau
Commission. I did. I switched over to Lance Armstrong. That's what I did. It's the most despicable display of wasted resources and monarchistic. This is not a president. This is a king to them. And
it's the same for every inauguration, Jay. It's the same kind of fanfare. It was the same for Bush. It was the same for Clinton.
I know it's terrible.
But the journalists.
Aren't we past that now? If this is a true democracy, shouldn't he be behind a desk pushing a pen right now and getting to work?
An example that sometimes we see in the world of sports, Vin Scully is famous for it. Kirk Gibson hits the home run in 1988. Right. And I believe there's a minute and 20 seconds of silence from the booth afterwards. They let the crowd take over. Sometimes silence is golden. And that was one of those examples that was wasted where the journalist wants to be a part of the story. And it was a shame because the story was bigger than
there's no story.
Jessica Yellen waving at the
But there's no story, which is why they kept piping in. There's no story here. It's just a lot of flag waving and it's a lot of bullshit. That's all it is.
Fair enough.
Yeah. And it's such a waste of time. This little group, these high school kids from Little Rock High School, they in 2 weeks they said that they raised $100,000 so that they can make the trip down to revel, to take part in all this crap. Man, imagine what some other high schools could have done with that $100,000 that they raised in 2 weeks. Man, it's amazing what people will do when they want to be a part, when they want to be on television.
You see, I don't know if it's all about that.
It is all about
that. I don't
know.
I think there is something about being a part of history and saying that you were there.
But for what, Dave? What is this? Where is the tangible? What is this that we are looking at?
You mean, well, okay, the speech, right?
Right.
He gave a brilliant speech.
The speech is fine. I have no problem with that. Let him swear himself in front of all those people, mm-hmm. make the speech, and let us be done with it.
I agree. It's an excessive waste of money.
Well, no, yeah, and they say they're not a monarchy, you know, and they make fun of England for being a monarchy and continuing on with this form of government, yet they're exactly the same thing. It's there is no difference except that they have an 8-year term limit.
Well, that's a pretty big difference. When the Queen is celebrating her 50th year
on the
throne,
an 8-year,
right?
Well, yeah, but they have an 8-year term limit. And they're wasting all this time with all this hoopla. Get to work, man. Get behind the desk and push that pen.
And these are the 4 years, Jay, where he will supposedly get work done. You get elected, and then you spend the first 4 years.
Well, yeah, he becomes a radical
now
because,
right.
You know,
that's right.
Which
and
is good.
And he's mentioning
and I like
gay
that.
Rights in,
yes.
in his inauguration
wow,
speech.
Wow, what a hero. He's
and
mentioning gay rights.
Climate change and all these things that actually matter.
Yeah. Now.
Now. All right. Let's you know what? Let's take a call
Crap.
Before we go to break. Oh, Jay. Settle down, Mr. Farrar. Let's go to Jerry in Snowden. You got to be nice, Jay. Jerry's
okay.
on the phone.
All
Hello,
right.
Jerry.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Good. How are you, man?
I'm an American, so, you know, watch what you say. I've lived there, and it's something special to walk down Pennsylvania Avenue. Trust me.
Yeah, I'm more of a Kennedy liberal than my co-host is.
That's though. Fine. I'll do it one day. Do we have to watch somebody else doing it?
And to comment on the Habs,
yes,
I think it's the same old Habs.
Yeah, but not the same old Habs from back in the day, right?
No,
the same
no,
old
no,
Habs
no.
Like
it's the same old Habs from last year.
Okay.
and I think we're in for a long year.
Well, and luckily, we're not in for a long year.
No, we're not. Only 40. We only have 47 of those to go, Jerry.
No, no. And what I mean is, it's going to be an unsuccessful year.
Well,
and I think they should sign PK.
I agree. If they don't, then I think they should.
Enough futzing around. You know, it's been hard. It's hard enough to get people. I remember when they signed Briere or tried to sign Briere, mm-hmm. and he wouldn't come here. Why? High taxes and whatever. Nobody wants to come here. And now when PK wants to come here, pay him.
Yes.
Pay him and show people that here we want to pay people. We want to go back to the glory years. I mean, you saw that ceremony on Saturday night. I saw those guys play. What a special time it was here in Montreal.
Jerry, is there anything worse than picturing him in blue and white or black and yellow?
No.
I don't know what that would do to this. It would just be a psychological.
Yeah.
Oh, it'd be such a mess for this town.
Yeah. I remember when I was living in the States and they couldn't sign Briere. He didn't want to come here. Here's a French Canadian. And all I hear is, how come we don't sign a French Canadian? Well, there was one that didn't want to sign.
Yeah, and it's same thing happened with Martin Lapointe several years ago, where he was offered the exact same contract from the Bruins. I think it was 5 years, $20 million, or four years, $20 million. Yeah, because he gets an extra $2 or $3 million out of it.
That's right.
Now, maybe if President Obama taxes the rich the way that he's threatening to, we'll see more movement coming up our way.
That's right.
Phil Mickelson was talking about that last week, how he might make a change because he's being taxed at a 63% rate right now.
Poor guy.
I'd feel bad for him, but...
Not that bad.
No, exactly. Thanks for the call, Jerry.
Talk to you later. Take care. Have a good night.
Thanks, you too.
Love you, Phil.
Thank you. Thank you. We caught that as Jimmy was fading him down. I think love he said, love your show.
Love
your... Like he's falling down a well. Love your show!
That's what happens. That's what happens to our callers after we hang up to them.
All right, Jim, let's take a break. And when we come back, you'll hear my conversation with Richard Deitch. And then after that, we'll speak with Thomas Jones on a very busy Kaufman show tonight. Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar here with you on this Monday evening. We're about to bring in our next guest. His name is Richard Deitch. It is his third appearance on the Kaufman Show, I believe. He's a writer and editor at Sports Illustrated. He's covered Super Bowls. He's covered Olympics. And we're going to discuss my favorite aspect of Richard Deitch and his tweeting and journalism experience. It's the media critic part. I think that is by far the most fascinating thing that you do. And this week, more than others, is one that I wanted to speak with you. This was a fascinating week for sports journalism between the Manti Te'o story and the Lance Armstrong story. Let's start with Te'o. You spoke with a couple of Pulitzer Prize winners over the weekend and published for your article today on SI.com. Now, this story could have been done differently, seems to be the theory.
Yeah, first of all, thank you for the invitation. And the third time I'm on, I didn't realize it was three.
I'm lucky.
And two or three. And then on top of that, it's interesting, you know, this is not to this is not to counter your terminology, but I don't think of myself as a media critic. I think of myself as a writer who reports and writes on the sports media. And I always try to – that's actually how I shape my focus and my writing, because I think you always want to try to report, especially when you can, as opposed to critique or critic. I think of someone like Pauline Kael more of a critic than what I do, which is hopefully opinionated writing or an opinionated blog. But anyway, I'm not sure where to begin with the – we want to start with the Manti Te'o story, right?
Yeah, and I guess we should probably give our audience a little bit of background as well.
Yeah, well, the story is there's a Notre Dame linebacker named Manti Te'o, one of the better ones in the country. And he, as part of his narrative, as part of sort of the mythology of Manti Te'o, his girlfriend and grandmother died, I believe, within a six-hour period. And then he went out to play a game against Michigan State and played really well. And this narrative of this guy, who's a really, really good football player, sort of overcoming these two really big losses in his life, leading Notre Dame to an undefeated regular season, being one of the Heisman Trophy finalists. You know, it's sort of a story that I think a lot of people can grab onto. Football player who deals with a lot of tragedy outside the field, sort of overcomes that or draws strength on that and plays really well, leading his team to a championship game. So what happens is that Manti Te'o's girlfriend, or the person who turns out not even to exist.
It's so messed up.
Yeah, exactly. So he has this girlfriend, and what happens is it turns out that the girlfriend doesn't exist. Deadspin breaks a story that pretty much shows the reader that the girlfriend is a figment of a hoaxer's imagination. Someone called this catfishing, which is the idea of creating this online persona to try to trick someone. So that's sort of part one, is that the Deadspin discovers that this girlfriend that Te'o has, I think it's Linnea Kukua, doesn't exist. They then take it further and assert that from those who they talk to, Manti Te'o was in on the hoax. They don't really sort of give the motivation as to why, but they say that Te'o was sort of part of his own hoax and, you know, sort of the indication that he wanted to sort of play this story up to be sympathetic, to, I guess, get more publicity. Moving forward, his story breaks. Te'o eventually talks to ESPN in a 2.5-hour conversation with Jeremy Schapp, not on camera, but some audio and a long transcript. Te'o says that he believed this was real, girlfriend existed, only believed she was totally not true up until a couple days ago, and that he was not part of the hoax at all, but had added to the elements of the mythology by lying about the story and telling reporters or pushing the story on, knowing full well that there really was no girlfriend who had died of leukemia. I mean, there's so many other facets of the story, but I would say tell your listeners to sort of, you just Google it and it sort of, it never ends. It's like the worst episode of Young and the Restless at this point.
It's worse than that. It seems that it's pulled at people's emotions. It's embarrassed a lot of people in our profession, I think.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, and I want to speak about the journalism aspect of this and where journalists potentially drop the ball. Now, when you speak to an athlete, you interview an athlete, and they tell you a story about their girlfriend or their mom or their dad, and it helps create this wonderful narrative, our instinct is not to double-check with the mom, the dad, or the girlfriend if the story is true.
Well, I think yes and no. I think there are things we check, and there are things we follow up on. And even in a place like mine, and again, you know, we added to the mythology, there are certainly things that we missed. And we fact-check rigorously at Sports Illustrated. But there are some things just within the profession that you do take on faith, because the fact-checking sort of part of it could basically go on infinitely.
Right.
You know, someone could tell you something. I'll give an example. Linebacker says when he was 7, he was overcome by this feeling that he was going to be the greatest linebacker in the world. Now, I guess in theory you could sort of go back to the parents, right, and ask if that's true. But if they have no recollection of that, you ultimately have to take sometimes the subject at their word, what they're saying. But I do think what the Taylor story does do is, and I think this is legit, is it does, like, I think re-remind a lot of us, especially in sports, to be very careful of mythology and to be very careful of when a story is so sort of tailor-made and set up to be larger than life or to be, you know, something out of sort of basically a Lifetime or Hallmark special, to really make sure that indeed those facts are there. Where I think everybody sort of messed up is twofold. One, I think everybody followed everybody's reporting and sort of printed the myth, didn't necessarily check it out. And what Deadspin did, on top of some really, really impressive online reporting, is, you know, they went, you know, the purported girlfriend said that she had gone to Stanford, or at least Tao had said she had gone to Stanford, and they went pretty deep in figuring out a way to get to Stanford and to try to find out if there was ever a student at Stanford named Linnea Kakua. When they found out there was not, they cross-referenced that against all their online reporting, and they realized that, hey, if nothing else, we have the All-American linebacker from Notre Dame claiming that this love of his life who died from leukemia, there is no record or existence of her. So there were red flags. I mean, there were inconsistencies in the reporting of the story. You know, the AP had, I think, a town. She was, I think the AP, and I'm paraphrasing here.
Yeah, it was Carson, like, City versus Carson.
Carson City, California versus Carson. So there were places where I think, you know, we as all journalists could have picked up on. Where I won't go to, and I think there are, you know, and this is an easy column to write, I don't think that sports writers by instinct or by rote are going to print the myth if they have any kind of knowledge of the non-myth.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are places, you know, there are certainly Notre Dame fan sites that are always going to, I think, glorify their players in the best light. But had a Sports Illustrated or had a New York Times gotten the same tip that Deadspin did? And let's not forget this. Deadspin got a tip. Deadspin wrote this story after they got tipped on this. I think good, sound journalistic places would have followed that tip and I think would have gotten to the same place that Deadspin did.
Do you think, Richard, that we've gotten to a day where Deadspin is going to be getting those tips because of the way that ESPN handles certain stories?
For sure. I mean, I think we've already gotten to that day. There is no doubt that that people will go to Deadspin with things that they will never go to ESPN, New York Times, you know, even SI, but I think SI is even thought of differently than ESPN. Because they have a track record of reporting and doing stories where others would not go. So in some instances, I think that's going to really benefit Deadspin. They're going to get tips that nobody gets, and some of the stories are going to turn out to be really titillating and sexy. They're also going to get tips on things that there is no way a place like mine or a place like the New York Times or the Montreal Gazette, et cetera, would ever print.
Right.
And they will go to that. So, you know, their journalism, I don't want to rip their journalism because they've got some really talented people there, is generally very strong. But where they will go editorially is places that a lot of us will not go. And then it is, in my opinion, up to the reader to decide in terms of taste, in terms of decency, in terms of however you want to define it, is that the kind of site you want to go to? Again, my sensibilities, I like that spin. I like them when they push the envelope, but I totally respect somebody who sees something on that site. It just sort of makes, you know, like an expose of drunken athletes somewhere, and it's like, hey, I don't. This is the kind of stuff I don't want to read about. I totally respect that as well. So I think I would, to your original question, I would say we're already past that. I think Deadspin is already getting those tips that ESPN will not. And if you read my story today, it's really interesting. Deadspin's sort of trail starts with a tip, an anonymous tipster in an inbox. ESPN's Tao trail starts with one of Tao's CAA, Creative Artist Agency representatives, telling ESPN, hey, I think something's up. That's a very interesting thing to me in terms of where those tips come from. One is sort of a very insider kind of tip. One is an outsider kind of tip.
I'm surprised they would even own up to the fact that it was coming from that.
Yeah, and I appreciate they did that. They were very transparent with that. But, you know, I think you got to, because, like, eventually, say they didn't own that up, you know, in my conversation with Vince Dorey, he's basically the head of sort of news at ESPN, doesn't own up to that, and somehow either myself or another person reports that, I think you have to be honest. One, I think you should be transparent if you're a news organization. And two, I think you got to get ahead of that, because I think the one thing that ESPN always has to protect itself from is this too closeness with agents, too closeness with leagues, because they have rights deals. And I think if you say, hey, listen, this is where the tip came from, you know, there's always going to be a chorus that says, oh, you guys are so tight with the agents, oh, you guys are this. But at least to me, you're putting it out there, you're being honest, you're letting readers judge, rather than not saying it, and then if it comes out after the fact, I think it, you know, to me that looks far more shady.
We're in conversation with Sports Illustrated's Richard Deitch on the Kaufman Show, and I feel like we could do 2 hours on Manti Te'o, but we have a few minutes left with you. Let's spend it talking about Lance Armstrong. What were your thoughts on the Oprah interview?
Yeah, and I apologize, by the way, for going long on Manti, but
no,
I actually
please,
have no
great.
Idea how to basically make that concise.
It's impossible.
Yeah, the story is ridiculous. You know what? I was really pleasantly surprised by Oprah, at least in part one, and in particular, the first, like, 6 minutes of that show. Asking, you know, generally speaking, in journalism, you want open-ended questions. You know, you want to ask why, how, things like that usually generally produce a good answer. But she flipped the script and said, I'm going to ask you a series of yes or no answers. That's all I want, yes or no. And then asked immediate, direct questions that got to the heart of, you know, I think what people were tuning in for. Did you use performance-enhancing drugs? Did you use EPO? I mean, I think she, at least how I saw it, immediately got wrestled control of that interview from Armstrong, and I don't want to say on the offensive, because that sort of seems like sort of a sporting event, but I think she let her subject know right away that this was not going to be the softest of softball interviews, and I think that was really good, and I think it set the tone for the first 25, 30 minutes of that interview. What's interesting about Armstrong and Oprah is eventually it sort of, especially the second part of that interview, became far more what traditional Oprah interviews can be, this sort of, you know, cycle of life, search for, you know, what's the meaning, Lance? Have you sort of come to a place where you can now go forward, cleansed? What struck me about that interview was just sort of how cold and hard Lance Armstrong is. You know, there were some who called him a sociopath. I don't know if I would go that far, but he did not go nearly far enough for me with the people whose lives he destroyed. I thought Oprah actually should have asked some more follow-ups, especially on Emma O'Reilly, the masseuse who Lance sued, called the prostitute. I mean, Lance might have been the most disingenuous part of that entire interview was when Lance said to Oprah, hey, we sued a lot of people. I don't remember. That's either sociopathic, which I'm not buying there, or you're just sort of dismissing, you know, or it shows you how casual Lance Armstrong was at one point of his life of destroying lives. And obviously the same thing with Betsy Andrew, same kind of sort of like really unsatisfying answer about someone else's life who, again, he called a liar and who he destroyed. I would say the same thing with the Lamond family as well. I mean, Lance Armstrong cost Kathy and Greg Lamond millions of dollars. I'm not even sure he mentioned them in the two-parter. So, you know, I haven't covered cycling, but I do have a lot of colleagues and friends who have. And Armstrong, again, is one of those people in sports who really was able to, I mean, look people in the eye and lie. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's an incredible sort of thing. I mean, eventually it sort of got him, like, years later, but he had such a long, long run of lying and deceit and destroying people's lives. I guess I wanted, I'll just be blunt, I guess I wanted more from him. And maybe that's unfair, and maybe that's not who he is, but I didn't get enough empathy at all during that interview. And I think if his goal, and I can only speak for myself, if his goal was to sort of win people over or to start rehabbing himself, if I was on that jury and if I was a viewer, I came away from those 2 hours not thinking this guy was rehabilitated. I would be like, all right, you know, those 2 hours are up, but this has not changed how I feel about you, Lance. So I'm trying to actually kind of makes me a little more angry. But, you know, I would give Oprah sort of, if I had a grade or a B, I probably was expecting far worse. But at least in that first hour, I thought she rose to the moment. And this is not someone who's a sports writer. This is someone who's not used to, you know, asking questions about drugs and USADA, et cetera. And I thought for within given those that framework. I thought she did a pretty good job.
I thought she did a very good job of giving himself a chance to seem human, even though he didn't ever take the opportunity.
I think that's well said. I agree with you.
And even at the very end of the interview, you see this indecision from Armstrong, not knowing, and 5 minutes earlier, trying to draw some kind of sympathy by talking about how it was a, quote, $75 million day for him.
Well, that, yeah, I mean, that
it just shows a cluelessness, Richard.
Yeah, well, I mean, in that sense, you know, you got a real sense of Lance Armstrong, who sort of, you know, who understood the value of his own mythology and his own myth. You know, and again, it is interesting. There's certainly going to be some people who have cancer who will always sort of consider him a hero and admire what he did. And he did get off the hospital bed and go ride and win Tour de France without leaving, you know, I guess those wins don't count. But he also manipulated the cancer community pretty significantly because he did basically put out this story that didn't exist. So, you know, if you're someone suffering from cancer now, I'm not even sure how you feel. I mean, do you use this guy as your inspiration? I guess if you use anything for your inspiration, if it's going to help you with your medical. But, yeah, it's a story that just ultimately renders really disappointing because not that you want to believe in all these myths, but it's just a guy who really at his core was nothing more than a bully and nothing more than somebody who, not that he took pleasure in dealing pain to people, but he was willing to do anything to sort of keep his place up on the mantle. And so I have zero sympathy for Lance Armstrong. When I think normally, I might actually have sympathy for people who, after all those years, sort of give the mea culpa and say, you know, I'm tired of running, I'm tired of lying, I apologize for my misdeeds.
Finally, Richard, you mentioned the cancer, and I find it interesting because it'll bring both of these stories full circle and together. It's strange how they both used the cancer to help prey on people's emotions and sympathies.
Yeah, it's a very good point by you, and I would say to your listeners, check out S.L. Price's piece in this coming issue of Sports Illustrated. It'll be out probably like Thursday or so on newsstands and in mailboxes. Because this is exactly what he writes about. He's obviously one of our best writers, one of the best sports writers in the country. And he ties both stories together sort of through the precipice of cancer and how that was what both Tao and Armstrong sort of used to tug at a lot of people's heartstrings. What it tells me is at least it tells, you know, we've been talking a lot about mythology in this conversation. It tells you the power of cancer, and it tells you like, you know, how people can draw strength from it, can draw weakness from it. But it really, in terms of storytelling and journalism, is a pretty powerful narrative. But I will say that this, Tim Layden, another one of our really good writers, wrote something on SI.com a couple days ago about how this is going to change sports writing. But it's going to change sports writing for the better, and I believe that too. And I think there's going to be stories now for a lot of us in the next, like, you know, 5, 10, 3, 2 years where we go the extra mile to check something, or if something is sort of sounds too myth, you know, too much sort of part of this myth-making, I think at least the good people in the profession are going to step back and realize, all right, you know, is this really true? Or can I make an extra call or two or search to sort of really confirm that this is indeed true? And my sense is that the writing and the reporting is going to be a little better from this. So while a lot of places missed, I think it's actually, I mean, I hate to sort of use the overused phrase, I think it's a teaching moment, and I think it's going to ultimately lead to better journalism.
You can follow him on Twitter at Richard Deitch, D-E-I-T-S-C-H. I will never call you a media critic again, I promise.
I appreciate that.
Thanks so much for your time tonight.
Thanks, appreciate it.
We'll speak soon. thanks to Richard Deitch from Sports Illustrated for another fascinating conversation. The guy brings it every single time, and we're lucky to have him on the program.
Yes, he does. I didn't know you were looking at me for confirmation
of this. Well, you know,
you don't need my help on that,
Dave. Sometimes, Jay, I get a little self-conscious. I need a little validation.
Yeah.
That's,
well,
you know.
Stop calling him a media critic.
I promise.
What's the matter with you?
I promise.
Dave.
Why is critic such a bad word? Why is it a four-letter word?
I don't know. It seems to be an ugly word. I don't know. I don't know what it is. People don't like the word critic.
I mean, I think he backs it up. I'll stand by it, but I'll say it quietly. I won't say it on air again.
A media analyst? They don't really use critic anymore. They use analyst.
I guess.
Movie analyst, I don't know.
I guess I consider myself a baseball analyst, not a baseball critic. Everyone's a critic.
I guess critic is just too harsh of a word for today's soft society.
When we return after the break on the Kaufman Show, we will keep your brain working. We're going to talk to Thomas Jones about CTE, concussions, suicide, and the after effects of a 12-year NFL career. Coming up next on the Kaufman Show. Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman and Jay Farrar here with you. Our next guest is a 12-year veteran of the National Football League. He's part of the 10,000 Rushing Yards Club, played in a Super Bowl, and I believe he's the first NFLer we've had on the program. He's also doing some very interesting stuff right now. He was in the news last week, and we're here to talk about his post-NFL career, not his NFL career. Welcome to the show, Thomas Jones.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. Right now, you're working on a documentary called The NFL, The Gift or the Curse. I was wondering if you could tell our audience a bit about that.
Yeah, well, you know, I played 12 years in the NFL and, you know, was blessed enough to play that long, and I had a lot of experiences. You know, I played on five teams, so I was in five different cities. And the documentary, The NFL, The Gift or the Curse, basically gives the fans an opportunity to life as an NFL football player through our eyes. And it's mainly about issues outside of the locker room, off the field. It's a six-part docuseries that deals with issues ranging to domestic violence, to the correlation between war veterans and NFL players. There's six parts to it. The first one is going to be on concussions and suicide, and obviously, you know, that's a major issue, and me being a retired player. It's something that's pretty relevant in my life, to see guys that I played against and, you know, guys that I grew up watching committing suicide, you know, from that CTE, that brain disease, you know, and you know, I felt, you know, just moved to do a documentary and try to give the fans an opportunity to see football off the field through a football player's eyes.
How early in your career did you become aware of the concussion problems in football?
You know what? I didn't really become that aware of it until, you know, we started hearing more publicly about the suicides. I mean, obviously, you know, it's a tragedy to see a guy like Junior Seau or Dave Dorsey, Andre Waters take their own life, and when they it seems they have the world in the palm of their hands, you know. But this CTE disease has been going on for a long time, you know. Unfortunately, it took some bigger name guys to bring attention to it, but you know, it's just something that you deal with. You know, as a player, you have to deal with concussions because, you know, that's part of the game. You know, you're going to get hit. You're going to hit the ground. You're going to hit people. And that's what we get paid to do. But, you know, it doesn't take a look at the fact that, you know, the consequences of those concussions could be deadly.
Thomas, what does the NFL do to protect their players?
You know what? I think they've come up with some new rules. You know, when I came into the league in 2000, you know, it was pretty much, you had to take care of yourself. You know, you had to, you know, gauge, you know, how you felt, you know, based on, you know, what was going on. You know, if you were a backup and you wanted to start, you know, you had to play with a concussion. If you were a starter and you knew your position was pretty much locked in, then, you know, you could take some time off, you know. But there really wasn't a premium on, you know, concussion safety at that time. You know, it was, listen, if you have a concussion and you can't play, you know, it was looked at as being soft. Or maybe you weren't being all the way honest, you know, you were just trying to get some time off. But now, you know, with the new collective bargaining agreement, which went into play my last season in the NFL with the Chiefs, you know, they've taken, you know, contact practices out of the season. We can only have 11 of them. Training camp's really now only one day or 2 days during training camp, which takes a lot of concussions because the concussions happen during practice more than the games. Also, you know, they have some of the rule changes and, you know, they're finding guys a lot more and stuff like that. But, you know, you're never really going to be able to take away from the concussion issue because that's the nature of the game. I mean, you learn this. I learned at 7 years old, the harder you hit somebody, the more intimidating you can be, you know, the more successful you're going to be on the football field. And that mentality never leaves you, no matter how long you play, no matter, you know, how many rules they change. I mean, you know, you get a rush as a football player from knocking somebody out.
12 years in the NFL is, I think, about three times the average length of a career. And you took a pounding in that time. I imagine that a lot of this is about a fear of the future.
Of course. I mean, I'm 34 years old. I just retired. You know, I mean, I have a lot of things going on. I have a production company called Independently Major Entertainment. You can check it out at teamime.com. You know, we have artists as far as music. You know, I have a Latin female singer in Miami. I have an R&B singer from Atlanta. I have a rapper from St. Pete, Florida, and I have a rapper from Columbus, Ohio. So, you know, basically, you know, we're doing a whole lot of different things. I'm blessed enough to have that corporation so I can have something to take up my time, but I still have moments, you know, and during the day and when I wake up sometimes where I'm just like, man, what am I supposed to be doing? You know, because football is such a huge part of my life and it's no longer there. Football is like a drug, man. I mean, when you put your whole life from 7 years old to 33 into one sport, I mean, it's addicting, man. It really is. It's kind of hard for you to watch the game sometimes just because, you know, you see the guys out there warming up and you get excited and you want to be out there, you know, and it's tough, you know, but, you know, I'm blessed enough to have a great corporation, great family, a great business that I'm running. And, you know, it takes some edge off of my time.
You hear about that yearning, Thomas, from a lot of professional athletes who have recently retired. And I think one of the biggest challenges is trying to find that new passion to latch onto. It seems like you have. And I mean, it's so closely related, at least this football documentary is so closely related. But, I mean, there is always that. There seems to be an interchange between entertainment and sports as well.
Yeah, well, you know, football is entertainment. You know, I mean, to be honest, you know, as a football player, you're almost like an actor. You know, we play on Sundays. So most Sunday mornings, you know, people are going to church or, you know, they're hanging out with their family. It's the last day off before the regular work day starts again. But, you know, at 10 a.m., you know, I have to find a reason to find a place inside of me to be furious and angry and mad enough to try to knock someone out or try to hurt someone for no reason, basically. I mean, that's really what it is. You know, I'm Thomas, you know, off the field, you know, or myself. But when I'm on that field, I'm Thomas Jones. I'm the guy that's in the newspaper, you know, the jersey that you see in the stores, you know, the guy that's in fantasy football. You know, I'm Thomas Jones, and I have to transform to that. It's almost like an actor, you know, I mean, you're yourself, you know, when you're in the trailer. But when you get on set, you have to turn it up. You have to turn into that character. And it's the same thing, and it plays a part in your mentality, emotionally, physically, it does. Psychologically, it does. I mean, it's a huge extreme to go from being a happy person to being a furious person for no reason.
And, you know, conversely, the guy who's on the other side of the ball from you on a Sunday afternoon who has to build himself to a point where he can concuss the opponent and knock him down and knock him out.
Yeah, I mean, it goes both ways, you know. So you have two guys who are pretty much like two mad dogs. I mean, it's a violent, savage sport, brutal, you know. I mean, for me, when I'm in between those lines, you know, I have no mercy, no remorse. You know, obviously at the end of the game, we're friends. But, you know, in those four quarters, I'm trying to win. You know, first of all, it's my job. I'm getting a paycheck for that. Number two, I'm a competitor. I don't want to lose, you know, because, you know, that's my family's name on the line. You know, I mean, if I play have a bad game, you know, maybe, you know, my sister goes to a restaurant or goes to a convenience store and somebody says, hey, your brother sucks. You know, I mean, there's a lot on the line, you know, and you're putting a lot on the line and you go out there and play on Sunday. So you don't have time to think about somebody else's health or somebody else's well-being because, you know, the more time you spend worrying about someone else, that's when you get hurt.
And yet you can put yourself into that focus and into that zone for Sundays, but here you are now, and the upshot of this documentary, which is in its editing process right now, is that you've decided to donate your brain to science when you pass away.
Yeah, you know, I mean, by me doing this documentary, it really hit home the concussion and suicide issue. We interviewed Dr. Ann McKee, who was at Boston University, and Chris Lewinsky, who actually was on Real Sports, and he was a wrestler, and he played at Harvard, and he wrote a book called Head Games. You know, once I actually went to their facility in Boston University, they were kind enough to let us come up there and shoot. And we actually have footage of Dave Dorson's brain, one of the NFL players that committed suicide. And they actually have 34 NFL players' brains out of the 34, 33 were diagnosed with CTE. And after I saw that, you know, I was just moved to donate my brain because I felt like when I was a running back, I took a lot of hits. I had a lot of concussions. I can't count how many concussions because you just play with them, you know, and you know, some concussions you don't even know you had. You just, you know, it just becomes a norm. You know, you mentally get prepared to not be mentally in the right state of mind because you have to be that way to play. It's almost better. The best part of the game for me was the first big hit because once I got the first big hit over with in the game, now I'm ready to play. So with some games I would almost run into somebody as fast as I could, or before the game I would slap somebody in the head or just have someone slap me in the head, slap me around a little bit just to kind of loosen me up. And you go out there and you play, you know, you play your hardest. And it's a crazy situation, but, you know, that's just the game.
Which, you know, I find that difficult to wrap my head around. And, I mean, I watch football every Sunday, like every red-blooded North American. But when you know that this game is so punishing that it can lead to a premature death, and yet we all get so excited about it, there has to be some conflict in there for you.
You know what? I think if you started playing later, you know, number one, we know way more now than we ever knew before about CTE because of the research. So obviously, you know, guys are getting an opportunity to decide whether or not they want to go through that. Where before, I mean, listen, we weren't that educated on it. So, you know, guys really didn't have the opportunity to say, hey, I'm going to, you know, go out and play knowing that CTE is a prevalent disease. But the fact is, man, I mean, it's the alpha male sport. I mean, you know, it's the you know, I mean, a guy can be 250 pounds and get knocked on his butt by a guy that's 180 pounds. I mean, it's about heart, devotion, courage. You know, I mean, all those adjectives are used in that game, especially at the NFL level. That's the highest level competition. There's only certain people, human beings, that can play that game physically to be that fast, explosive, mentally tough. Strong. I mean, in between those lines, man, it's like animals out there, bro. And, you know, you got hard metal, hard plastic helmets, and you know, these are weapons, dude. You know, I never wore lower pads. I wore thigh pads, maybe little ones, but I wore less pads so I could be as fast as possible. So, you know, you have to mentally deal with getting hit. You know, I had a lot of ailments, things that bother me now, you know. But for the love of that game and the rush and being, it's almost like bungee jumping, you know, or jumping out of a plane, you get that rush of not knowing what's going to happen. It's the same thing with football. Every time I step out there, I might be paralyzed. I might tear my Achilles, tear my ACL, or I might run for 200 yards and 3 touchdowns and be the hero of the day. I mean, just the fact that you don't know what's going to happen is the rush.
We're wrapping up with 12-year NFL veteran Thomas Jones. You can go to teamime.com to get more information on the NFL, the gift or the curse, and his roster of musicians as well that you have signed up. Thomas, would you encourage your kids to play football?
I mean, everybody asks me that question, and it's funny because, you know, honestly, I would have to physically, from a physical standpoint, I would have to say no. But from a mental standpoint, yeah, because I learned everything that I am today by doing football. I mean, I learned how to be a team player. I learned how to be goal-oriented. I learned how to, you know, keep fighting and get knocked down. I learned how to be mentally tough, physically tough. I learned how to, just handle my emotions because it's an emotional game. Learn how to be humble, you know, because you have to be humble because you're going to have a 100-yard game and be on the top of the world and have a 30-yard game and everybody says you suck or he sucks or, you know, whatever. I mean, it teaches you so much as a man and as a person that I wouldn't change anything. But when I think of my kids possibly, which I don't have any, but if I did, I would probably encourage them to play something else just because I wouldn't want to be a parent having to go through what Junior Seau or Dave Dorson or any of these other parents of the deceased players have to go through.
Finally, Thomas, if you were to be able to sit down with a young NFLer who's just breaking into the league now, how could you convince them that the onus needs to be on them to take themselves out of the lineup when they know that they're hurt?
If you're 21 years old, you know, I mean, honestly, you're not thinking about when you're 34. You're thinking about, you know, going to the Pro Bowl, going to the Super Bowl, being an All-Star, being on billboards, living a dream. You know, football is a game where it's almost like you're sleepwalking. You're in a dream. Because as soon as you stop dreaming, the football is when your career's over. You know, I mean, you can't say, well, you know, when I'm 33, I hope I don't have CTE. You can't think about it. You just have to play. You know, you have to play every down like it's your last, every game like it's your last. And you basically have to live that dream while you're playing. Because as soon as you start saying, I don't want to get hurt or I don't want to get CTE, and that's when you lose focus and that's when somebody else comes in and take your job.
NFL, the gift or the curse, when will it be out, Thomas?
Well, you know, we're talking to distribution companies right now. We have a lot of people interested. I think it's going to be a groundbreaking documentary because it's coming straight from the players, and it's deals straight with players' issues. And we're talking to the fans. So the fans get an opportunity to interact with the players, basically. And, you know, even in the interviews that we've done, you know, we ask the fans, hey, you know, I would want the fans to know this. I want all the NFL fans to know that. So, you know, I think it's groundbreaking in that way because we want to interact with the fans. The fans make our game. You know, I mean, they buy tickets, they watch the game, they support us, they buy our jerseys. And I don't think anybody's ever done a documentary that actually deals directly with the fans to make them feel a part of who we are and actually try to take them through the NFL and through our eyes. I think that alone is enough to make this thing a really big deal. And then the concepts that are included are issues that are always brought up. So, you know, we have a lot of distributors that are interested. You know, we're just trying to find the right home for the project. You know, anyone out there who's definitely interested in making putting a groundbreaking documentary out to the public, to the fans, and actually coming from an NFL player, you know, and not an outside, you know, entity, you know, feel free to reach out to me on Twitter at Thomas Jones RB, or my email is tj@teamime.com. And I definitely like to get up there to Montreal too, man. I mean, I played in Toronto with the Jets, and I visit Toronto, but Montreal's a nice place, so I'd definitely like to visit you guys. Maybe in the summer when it's a lot warmer, though.
Thanks so much for your time, Thomas. I really appreciate it.
Okay, no problem. Thanks for having me.
All the best. We'll speak soon. Our thanks to 12-year NFL veteran Thomas Jones. What a fascinating interview that was. So cool to speak to somebody who's so closely involved in the story.
And who thinks outside the box as well.
Yeah.
It's nice to see that once in a while.
I wonder, Jay, if we'd spoken to him last year while he was still a football player and not retired. And we've had this conversation before about how we prefer to speak with retired athletes because they're much more candid.
Right.
Interesting question.
Whole different animal.
Yeah. Our thanks to Thomas Jones. Follow him on Twitter, Thomas Jones RB. This is the Kaufman Show. We're going to be back in a few minutes. We'll open up the phone lines, 514-790-1690. But next is John Kakalakis with a sports update. Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar here with you. Phone lines are open, 514-790-1690 if you're out of town. 1-866-896-2546. Our thanks to Thomas Jones and Richard Deitch. And now it's your turn.
Tweet us.
That's right.
I'm at the Kaufman Show.
And Jay
and
is
at
it?
J-Pub Radio.
There you go. Hey. Took the words right out of my mouth. We're also on Facebook, the Kaufman Show on Facebook. We've been posting there more and more and more. So give it a like. And it's another wonderful place to interact with Jay and myself.
And I'm Jay Farrar on Facebook, and I accept all friends.
Well,
I'll get whatever I can take.
God, you're easy.
I'm so easy. I'm a whore on Facebook. That's what I am.
See, which scares me a little. I've accepted friendships from a bunch of people on Facebook that I don't know. And it's changed
so
the way that I book the face.
Really?
Yes.
There's
no more pictures from my weekend away and this and that. It's,
no, I still put them on.
It's
I don't
tonight
care.
On the show, and it's, I was at Fenway Park and you weren't, haha.
Yeah, my problem is that where I work, it's not always me posting the photos. So I got to be careful what I get tagged in sometimes. Is that a Diet Coke can over there?
That is a can of Diet Coke.
They've changed them.
Since Bill Clinton's deposition?
Is that what it is?
Well, that might be the last time you saw one. This actually, Jay, is a case of Diet Coke. Which was in the...
Were we expecting a long night, Dave?
No, that's actually what this...
What are you, Francois Gagnon?
That's what this thermos full of coffee is for, actually.
Okay.
No, the case of Coke was in the car.
Okay.
And the car is now parked outside of the TSN 690 studios on Green Avenue in beautiful Westmount.
Uh-huh.
And
if anybody wants to come by and damage it, you know where it is now.
There you go. It's the Civic.
Yeah.
I didn't want 8 exploded Diet Coke cans inside the car. It's for those of you not here right now, it's incredibly cold in Montreal. And I figured that might be the safest way. So there you are, Jay. That's my story. I'm sticking to it.
I hear Jimmy had a problem with some... cans recently.
Well, basically, I got a 24-pack of ginger ale. I was bringing it to my parents. But, of course, we had the cold spell overnight a few nights ago.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know that. I went home. I was too tired to take it out of the trunk. So I woke up in the morning, and I brought it to my parents' place. I could feel it a lot heavier than it should have been.
Right.
So I didn't think anything of it until my mother took the can, and she tried to open it, and then it just exploded right...
All over your mother.
Well, I mean, more closer to the sink than anything.
Well,
but
thank
still,
goodness for
it was
that.
Scary. She was okay, but she was very.
She was okay. She wasn't hurt. But
yeah.
I would imagine there were some interesting Greek words that were said after
One
that.
One of those horrendous can of the dry accidents that we hear about all the time.
Yes, and I believe when I said, "Well, you owe me like $9, including the deposit." No, Jimmy, I won't be paying you anything.
Really, you're going to charge your mother for the exploded Greek ginger ale cans? Okay.
And that's the part of the show that's been sponsored by the Soda Corporation.
Right.
Travis Nelson, the polemicist on Twitter, tweeting in, almost makes me feel like the game of football might be impossible to save, in reference to the interview with Thomas Jones.
Right.
And I get where he's coming from. First of all, that was it was fantastic to speak with an NFLer and somebody so closely associated with the story. You know that when he mentions guys like Dave Duerson and Junior Seau, that it means a lot more coming from him, that he's fearful for his future.
And the fact that he would reconsider putting his children into minor football is, I thought that was very revealing to
me. It was, but he also said that everybody asks him that, and I wonder if he tailors an answer because of that. I almost wish in retrospect that I hadn't asked it.
Yeah. Well, no, usually the answer is, oh, absolutely. Put your kids in football. There's nothing wrong with that. We have safety amongst the coaches and so on. He actually said no, which was a surprise to me.
Well, but he also talked about how it's like a drug and how addicted he is to it.
Right.
And knowing all these things, he still talks about how it's the type A alpha male sport.
Right.
And there's no escaping it. And I mean, it's a weird, it's actually, he's probably the perfect person to be doing a documentary about this because he's so passionate about the game, and yet there's this conflicting feeling that he obviously has.
And it is addictive, and you know why it's addictive, Dave?
Why?
Coming from somebody who played at a fairly high level, at major junior level, the hits, of all things, is the thing that you get the adrenaline rush, where the endorphins start going. When you throw a huge hit and the impact of that hit and knowing that the other guy got the worst of it, well, that's just your, I guess you could say, some of your alpha male instincts going, bam, I got that guy. What a rush that is. And there's where the addictiveness comes from.
Right.
And then you want to throw another one and another one and another one until you start throwing hits that are so hard. And that's when people get hurt. And but that's just the nature of the game. That's but the way it works.
I think we see that in the National Hockey League as well.
Yes, you do. You know, somebody throws a big hit, the crowd gets a rise out of it, and boom, your body is full of endorphins. You know, thereby enabling you to get this addictive sense of, man, I really want to do that again.
Man, I got to say, Jay, it's tough. I don't know how to...
When you get hit, though...
Well, no, that's not what he said.
No, I know.
He said that the game didn't feel like it had officially started until he got that first big hit.
Right, right. And when you get hit...
It like wakes you up. Right?
It wakes you up, and it's also...
Which is a weird thing to say because it clouds your mind.
It clouds your mind. Yeah, it's true. It's kind of, there's kind of a dichotomy
yeah,
happening
a little bit,
there.
Huh?
And you know what? When you get hit... There's, believe it or not, Dave, there's a bit of a rush in that, too.
Oh, yeah.
You'll see it sometimes when the microphones are close to the field and there's a big impact. You can hear both players when they're down on the ground go, woo, mm-hmm. woo, what sure. a hit, baby. You know, congratulating the other guy on the hit that he gave him and the collision that they just had is just a lot of fun. And remember, we are animals and we still enjoy a little bit of violence, even if it's a little bit more controlled.
Actors. He said that they're like actors.
Yeah.
I thought, again, there were just so many little things in that interview that I thought were very interesting, and we could go through it piece by piece, but it's now online, live streaming at thekaufmanshow.podbean.com, as well as Richard Deitch's interview. And I imagine we'll be going back to both of those for sources of inspiration throughout the program tonight. But, you know, I'll tell you, Jay, like, in all honesty, it doesn't make me not want to watch football, what he was saying. It's a strange thing. He's talking about how it's this deadly sport, but yet it's so much fun.
It's the
it is what it is, right?
It's the modern day gladiator.
Right.
I mean, that's what it is. And the funniest thing about, you know, once in a while I'll see a hit like I did in the Patriots game on Sunday, where it kind of makes you a little bit sick to your stomach, where you say, "Yeah, wow, that wasn't." When a guy gets hit and he's not hurt, and they both get up and everything's okay, and it was a there's a loud crash and the crowd goes wild.
Yeah, but when the guy doesn't get up and they go to commercial and it's all quiet, that's a terrible feeling.
And his arms are sticking up in the air because he has no idea where he is. His body has stiffened up because he's lost consciousness. Well, that's where it makes you a little bit sick to your stomach. But then everybody forgets about it 5 minutes later as the game goes on. You know? So it's, you know, we like to enjoy what we enjoy, but there's a cost to it. You know, and if they're not going to change the game, well, then they have to educate people about the game, and they may have to make sure what's at stake when you play this game.
But, Jay, we saw examples even this season, and it doesn't matter that the NFL is putting in safeguards, where the Jets' third-string quarterback
won't make a difference.
Kept himself in the game after getting a concussion because he knew that this was his opportunity, and he didn't want to lose the position to Tim Damn Tebow.
Right.
That is a problem.
There's millions of dollars at stake.
Yes, your future is at stake. And your career, not everybody gets 12 years in the NFL like Thomas Jones did. Most
yeah.
guys don't.
Yeah.
And if you get that opportunity, you need to pounce upon it.
The paycheck comes at the end of the week. The ramifications of your hit come usually years later. So, I mean, you're looking at the here and now, and you know, that kind of overpowers your decision-making.
Max Harris weighing in on Twitter, Max the Guru down in San Francisco. Watch the clip of Alex Kovalev elbowing Darcy Tucker in the head and see the crowd's reaction.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking it was bloodlust, right?
Yeah. I mean, and
I was at that game, actually.
That's what it is. That's what it is. We're no longer feeding Christians to the lions, but we have our own form of entertainment and violence, and that's what it is. And I'm not ashamed to say that I enjoy it. Because you got to get that energy out somehow. We still are what we are. We have not evolved to the point that violence is unpalatable to us.
No, but there are so many places that one can go to find it. I mean, turn on a television.
I know, but it's not real. It's not real.
Okay.
When you're watching,
turn on the news.
When you're, it still doesn't seem real.
Fine.
It's
watch
still filtered.
Boxing or the UFC.
Well, that's it, and that's part of it. Boxing, UFC, hockey, football. That's our form of gladiator entertainment. The news still seems filtered, even though you know it's real what's going on, but the media picks and choose what they want to show you. There's nothing more raw or more devastating when it comes to hits when you see it at a live football game. It's there.
You mean
it's not filtered.
It in person as compared to watching on television?
Even so.
Even on TV,
the media doesn't have time to filter it out and show you it from a perspective which is not live.
You said that there's a big collision and you'll hear two guys go, woo!
Yeah.
That's because the microphones are turned up on the field.
Right. Because you want to hear the helmets hit each other.
Because you want to hear that. It's the theory that people watch.
And I love it.
Car races for the crashes.
Yeah, I love it. I am no better than anybody else. I love it when I see that.
I'm not claiming to be any better. I don't like UFC. Oh, there, I said it. I've tried. I've faked it. I don't like UFC. I can't get behind it. I have a lot of issues with watching somebody who's had the pulp beaten out of them. Those 2 seconds, Jay. It's those 2 seconds before, when the fight is over, before the ref calls the fight. And
where he gets the extra punches in because...
Right, and I've seen a dozen of those UFC fights that end 5 seconds later than they should. And it's that collective 60 seconds or whatever it is that I've seen that it looks like somebody's hitting a punching bag, and it's not...
They are.
It's not pleasant to watch. There's nothing about that that I enjoy.
No, it's not. And unfortunately, there's no kind of device that has been invented that can distinguish between an opponent who's been knocked out or one who hasn't.
Well, no, I watched a UFC fight, I guess it was about a year and a half ago. Frenchman. I can't remember his name. But he was out cold on his feet, woke up, and then knocked the other guy out.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, well, that has happened many times.
It was one of the free fights, so I remember I watched
Forrest
it at home.
Griffin is notorious for that. There are rounds in which he doesn't...
Cheek Congo? Was that it?
It could be Congo. There are rounds which these guys don't even remember. Even when they just happen at the end of the fight.
So yeah. You'll see it in the interview.
Well,
you hear that in football.
I have no idea what happened in the third quarter. I have no idea what happened in the second round. I don't remember it. But then you come to. You know,
it's funny. We actually, you know what, that reminds me of a story. Maurice Richard, the game that he scored, was it 5 goals against the Bruins or something like that, where he got knocked out, where he...
Yes.
The Hal Quackenbush game.
Right.
Where he, I think one of the quotes after that game was Richard talking about how he had no recollection of the third period of that
None
game.
At all. None at all.
Obviously a concussion, but I never put it together until now.
Yeah.
Because we didn't care, because much like we were talking about with Richard Deitch before, the narrative doesn't... You want to create a narrative that allows it to fit, make it into lore. So Manti Te'o makes up or is part of this whole conspiracy where they make up a girlfriend who's died of cancer to help build up the legend of Manti Te'o.
Yes.
It's all insane.
You know what the amazing part of that whole thing is? Is that dude almost got away with it. That's the funniest part. He was close to getting... Can you imagine, how stupid... You have, and I don't care what everybody, there's no proof that he was involved with it. He was involved with it. He knew the guy that was faking the Twitter account. The guy was involved with it. It was obviously a publicity stunt.
For the sake of responsible journalism right now, just assume that he knew about it before telling people the truth.
Okay, so we'll leave it at that.
He embellished the story
right
after it's been proven that he knew that it wasn't true.
Which in this day and age, you know what's so funny about it is how stupid... I think he is for thinking that he could actually get away with it. And then it's even dumber that he almost did. So, I mean, you know, I thought, wow, how stupid was he that these guys actually thought that they can get away with this hoax? And then they go ahead and almost do get away with the hoax, which even, oh my goodness, my faith in some of the media and in humanity in general has really gone down the drain after that.
But, Jay, people bought it hook, line, and sinker. I mean, there was a story in the South Bend, Indiana newspaper. I can't remember what the paper's called. But this is the paper of record in the town where Notre Dame is.
Right.
And it's talking about how Te'o had met this girl at a game at Stanford. And the story is just pure schmaltz. It's like their eyes met across the field.
Sure,
and he touched her hand. And...
Very romantic.
And at least they're taking the lead now in the story, and they're trying to shame Notre Dame a bit and try and get them to speak out a little bit more about the subject, because shock, shock, Notre Dame's been very quiet about this. Still gotten more press than Lizzie Seberg, the Notre Dame student last year who accused a player of sexual battery, was told to shut up, and committed suicide. But that doesn't fit in with the narrative, right?
Right. Right. I just...
Okay, the thing that you could do right now that would break my heart would be to tell me that everything about R.A. Dickey is a lie.
Even, you know what?
Because that's one that I've bought into, I mean... And it allows me, looking at R.A. Dickey allows me to look at all these other schmoes in sports and think, well, at least there's some good people out there.
The first time I heard about R.A. Dickey's past was when Jeremy Schapp did an amazing story on him on ESPN. I heard it on this station, actually, during our ESPN broadcasts. And I thought, wow, you know, that's okay. You know, I'm not really taken with R.A. Dickey that much. I'm not. I'm like, yeah, that sounds like every other schmo I know in this business, you know, or
really?
In life. Yeah. You know, except for the fact that he's a Major League Baseball player. But he's going through all the stuff that everybody else goes through. It's just that he happens to be pitching in the major leagues and get paid a lot of money
He's a lot more forthright about it, though.
He is. And why shouldn't he be? You know, I mean, everybody I know has gone through some sort of revelation and some sort of, you know, has really hit the lowest of a low in their time as being a human being. And I don't find it different than anybody else. The difference is, like you say, is that he's willing to talk about it and that he's a Major League Baseball player who's happened to excel at his age.
But it's also how one handles the situation, right?
That is true as well.
And look at how Lance Armstrong has handled his situation.
Yes, he's doing a fine job.
Yeah, right, exactly. with no honesty and... you know, I think that R.A. Dickey could very easily have not talked about his past and not talked about all these things, but I think he looked at it as a cathartic thing.
Yeah. And that's
perhaps it. If Lance Armstrong liked human beings half as much as R.A. Dickey, Lance Armstrong allowed himself to be built into something he wasn't.
And that's the problem with Lance Armstrong. I'll tell you now, I will not sit here and judge him. I don't care. I'm not better than him. I've made my mistakes in life as well. He lied. I'm not even mad at him for lying. I don't care that he lied. The fact is, the problem is that he came out so aggressively towards others. That's where I'm going to start judging him.
He bullied everybody in his path.
He bullied everybody using his money and his power to do so.
Right.
And I will never judge anybody for making mistakes. You did drugs? Fine. Every other cyclist out there was doing drugs too. You lied about it? Fine. We all want to protect our own asses.
Yeah, okay. I'm fine with that.
Yep.
But again, it's the bullying, it's the suing people. The quote, oh, I honestly, Oprah, I don't remember how many people I've sued. I've sued so many. That is, I mean, the epitome of arrogance and narcissism.
Right.
I was happy he got the platform, and I was happy that he used it. And I know that he denied certain things. I think it'll all eventually come out in the wash. I also don't think that Lance Armstrong probably deserves much more airtime. Well, I can't see what else he would do beyond this for us to bring him up again. And I feel like I've said that a bunch of times.
Well, if he's smart, he'll just disappear.
But the whole thing about this, the only reason he came clean is because he's so addicted to competition that he's hoping that this will be the grounds that will allow them to reinstate him. That's what this is about. Before he's able to rehabilitate himself.
He wants to get another one in.
In the public.
Sounds kind of like Roger Clemens. Sounds kind of like Roger Clemens, doesn't it?
A little.
Without admitting. And remember when Roger Clemens.
Where are they both from?
Texas.
The great state of Texas.
That's right. And the one thing about Roger Clemens. And I remember I was saying this, and a lot of people disagreed with me. I said Roger wants to do this. It's all when Roger said that he was coming back and he was playing in double-A ball, it was all for me, that was admitting what he had done wrong. For me, that was his Oprah interview.
Really?
He wanted to prove to the world that he was able to do this thing clean in his older age.
He already did that interview, and he did it, I think, with Scott Pelley on 60 Minutes.
Yes, and said nothing.
And I will assume that... Well, he said a lot. It was the Lance Armstrong interview before Oprah.
Right, exactly.
It was every Lance Armstrong interview before Oprah.
That's right.
Including the threats of legal action.
Right.
Is that how it works? I'll sue you. I guess that's more of an American thing than a Canadian thing.
Yeah, or you point at the guys on the stand in your hearing and said, listen to me, I have never done... I mean, you pull a Bill Clinton. You know, there's one thing for denial. And then
as I take a sip of my Diet Coke.
Please, go ahead. There's one thing for denial, and there's one thing for aggressive denial. And when you start getting aggressive.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman,
there.
Miss Lewinsky.
Yes.
And now I'd like to get back to work.
Yes.
For you, the American people.
That's right. That's fine, and that's just a denial. There are no lawsuits involved. You're not putting other people down. You're not costing anybody else money. But once you start doing that, and you start infringing on the rights, and you start questioning the character of others.
Well, that's it.
In order to defend yourself.
The issue is not what he did. It's that he what he did to cover up what he did.
Yeah, pretty sleazy. If you ask me.
I thought Oprah did a bang-up job. I really did. And,
well, I mean, she just had to sit there and listen, didn't she?
Yeah, but...
I didn't know she was still alive.
There's an art to that. Oh. You didn't know Oprah was still
yes.
alive.
I thought Oprah... I don't know.
Wow.
I thought her and Phil Donahue were on vacation somewhere.
No, that's Maury.
Oh.
Maury.
Maury.
Jay, the results are in. You're not the father.
Yo, I told you I wasn't the father.
This is the Kaufman Show. We'll be back.
Ricky Lake.
Say it a million times. We don't play enough Neil Young on this show. Got to speak with that
music
director. Something
yes.
wrong with him.
It was nice to hear some Led Zeppelin earlier.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah.
I.
It's more up my alley.
Is it?
Neil Young, Led Zeppelin, like that stuff.
Okay. Yeah. I'll try and accommodate you in the future.
Okay. Thank you.
I still haven't heard that Zeppelin live album that came out at Christmas time. It's supposed to be fantastic.
No, I heard about that, and yeah. Yes, Travis Nelson, I will be your friend on Facebook. Absolutely, I will. Sorry, that just came through here.
You could add me too, Travis.
Yeah.
We're all friends like that. Once again, you can reach us on Twitter. I'm at The Kaufman Show. Jay is at J Pub Radio. We're also on Facebook. Do give the show a like. Type in The Kaufman Show and you'll find it. Let's go to Mike in St. Leonard. Good evening, sir.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. I just wanted to actually ask Jay a question before you brought up a few other points.
Uh-oh. Sure. Fine. Be what? Like that.
Jay, have you seen a marked increase in your business since the Canadians have come back?
Yeah.
Already, eh?
Yeah. I mean, Saturday night, we wouldn't have had anything. There would have been no events. There was nothing going on at the Bell Center otherwise. There was no UFC. So, you know, I mean, I could say there would have been a hell of an increase. But the key is it's not necessarily Saturday nights or the weekends. It's those nights, Wednesday night, Tuesday yeah. night, Monday night. Those are the days that we're really hurting for the pub industry. If we were to, we can't solely rely on hockey in order for our business to run. Otherwise,
oh, of course not.
Otherwise we'd be bankrupt in the summer. But at the same time...
No, but in the summer, Jay, you have the festivals, and there's such an upswing in tourism.
There is, but we're the kind of pub that we don't really have a terrace, although we probably will have one soon. But, I mean, for now, we don't. And, you know, so...
Finally annexing that park across the street, huh?
Yeah, that's what we're going to do. So to answer your question, Mike, absolutely, my friend. Yes, it does help.
Good for you. Good for you.
Thank you, buddy.
No problem. Dave, I just want...
Your turn, Dave.
Oh, okay, good. Good.
Both of you. Richard Deitch, the guy who spoke to earlier.
Yes, from Sports Illustrated.
I mean, that's outstanding. His insight is.
Isn't he the best?
On.
Yeah, he's unbelievable.
But you know what it is, Dave. You know, at the end of the day, everyone loves a good story, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, and that's what the football player at Notre Dame gave us. You
he
know?
Did.
The fact that people bought in so easily is the fact that people want that.
But I'll tell you, a lot of people did not know who Manti Te'o was until last week.
Exactly.
And I know in the States it's a different story, but he reached a level that, I mean, for crying out loud, he's going to be on Katie Couric's show this week.
Is it a bad thing for him, though? You know, that old saying, no such thing as bad publicity?
Yeah, it's debatable. When you're this close to being drafted in the NFL, I think he could get a serious... I think he could be drafted 20th as compared
to...
Is this
going
to
be his
third.
Oprah? Is this going to be his Lance Armstrong
the
moment?
Katie? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Katie Couric, absolutely. Except that it won't be anywhere near as big.
But you,
no.
You had...
Just as cringy, though.
Yeah, probably. It is. But you had a reporter on just last week who was speaking about, or 2 weeks ago, from Toronto, I guess, talking about Ari Dickey and how she loves the narrative.
Yeah, Stacey May Fowles.
Exactly. So, I mean... Like you even said just now yourself, now we're going to start questioning everyone's sad story.
Well, that's the thing. It's weird that legit? I can buy into it on R.A. Dickey, but because it seems to be so true. I mean, he tweeted today that he's off to India tomorrow to go do work at a former brothel. I mean, just
sure,
amazing. Well, but
sure, R.A.
Are we? I guess we're at that point, right?
Did anyone see him at the airport, Dave?
Well, we'll get the India Times.
He's resurrecting Gandhi as well. We didn't know this. He's bringing him from the dead.
Are we supposing that R.A. Dickey did not climb both peaks at Kilimanjaro last year?
I didn't see from anyone from ESPN up there with a camera.
That he didn't go uphill both ways up that mountain? Come on.
Yeah, it's not legit. I could be saying that too. So, you know, it's a great... He's going to India. Okay. He's getting better now, you know? Getting better for him.
Hey, Mike, you going to come into town and come see the Arkells with us on Friday, March the 1st?
That actually may work for me because
good.
I love that band, and Friday night is good for me, you know? I'd love to come and see them, Arkells, actually.
It would be
coming
fun
to town. He's in St. Leonard,
exactly.
For God's sake.
Exactly.
Coming to town.
I understand that sometimes that requires effort on a Friday night.
All right.
If you're chilling at home in St. Leonard,
yeah, exactly.
It seems like the Corona Theater might seem awful far away.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I just wanted to say as well, also, on one of your intros you brought in, you were playing some Led Zeppelin. I don't know if you've seen Celebration Day yet.
Oh, that's funny. I just mentioned that I haven't. I'm looking forward to finally sitting down and watching it.
Outstanding.
Okay.
I watched it, and I was actually blown away by the quality of the way these guys can play after all these years and not being together on an even semi-regular basis will just floor you.
One of my biggest regrets, Mike, was having tickets for Page and Plant at the Montreal Forum and not being able to go.
Wow.
And I've told this story on air before, and I didn't get into much detail then, and I won't get into much detail now, but needless to say, kids, be good.
Behave.
Wow. Behave.
Sounds like one of my stories. That's
yeah,
pretty good,
Dave. It was a rough night.
was a rough night, huh?
My friend Paul still thanks me for giving him a ticket at the last minute.
I'm sure
concert.
He's really happy.
He was actually in line for Zeppelin in 81 when they announced that John Bonham had died.
Yeah, my dad had tickets.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Tickets went on sale the same day. People were lined up outside the forum when they made the announcement that John Bonham had passed away. So I was happy that my buddy Paul got to go, but kids, be good. It's a big regret.
Dave, I tweeted you last week after that big loving at the practice there last week to go to the game. And you
yes.
had other plans.
Yes. I think we did that by DM, didn't we?
Yeah. It was a good idea not to go to the game, obviously. Yeah.
I had a wonderful weekend.
Yeah, good. Any time away from that place is good.
Listen to me.
Ridiculous. But,
I don't sound like I watched that on Saturday night. Come on.
Yeah, good for you. You didn't miss anything. You missed, actually, you know what? It's funny because in your update you have Terry saying he hasn't seen the team practice, but that was what that happened on Saturday. That was like an exhibition game. So I don't know where this is going with that team, but I hope it can get better. But honestly, just adding Pruss and Armstrong is not going to take you from 15th to 8th place.
Well, especially if Subban's not playing, right?
Yeah, I don't even want to get into that now because I'm getting to the point of, you know, it's just silly. I mean, at least he was at the Lakers game. He's looking good, though. Looks sharp.
Yeah, well.
You know?
Yeah, he's 22 years old. That's why.
He already knows he can have my job if he wants it. He can do weather on CTV,
exactly.
And then he can do the morning show, the afternoon show, and the evening show at TSN.
Damn 690. Him and his charisma.
You know what? I would just sign him just for the fact that he sells tickets and keeps people interested.
You know,
absolutely.
I'll tell you that there's nothing wrong with that.
It's still an entertainment product.
Exactly.
I have heard several people in this industry that I respect and trust and admire and want to be like one day say that there is no athlete in this town that encompasses all the good and warmth and happiness that Gary Carter brought until P.K. Subban showed up.
Probably right.
And I don't feel that firsthand yet, but just the fact that there's some people who've watched him and seen him a lot closer than I have feel that's pretty damn cool.
Too bad his teammates don't feel the same way about him that way, I guess, and Coach Terry.
Well, see, I don't know if that's true. I don't know if that's true. I've never heard a player say anything bad about him.
You know what?
And anybody that does, you've got to imagine that there's a certain amount of jealousy of the hot young kid that comes to
Gary town. Carter went through the same thing.
There you go.
That is true. Gary did go through the same thing.
And both love the camera, which definitely creates some sort of animosity amongst players who are more the working Joes of the team.
Nobody likes a little bit of swag, you know?
That's true.
You know, swag always rubs people the wrong way, except for your fans. Your fans will always take it in so long as you're wearing their colors and their jersey.
True. Well, you know what? I tweeted to a friend of mine on Twitter. I said, you know what? If it gets to a point where this goes on too long, I love that guy enough as a player and at everything he's tried to do so far in his young career with Hyundai and everything, that I would rather see him traded than to continue here disrespected. And not
do you actually?
Paid.
Really?
Yeah. Because you know what? At some
curse point, of the Bambino much?
Well, look at the Canadians. You know, we never appreciated Chelios the right way.
Mm-hmm.
And he went to go on and flourish. And I think, you know, at some point, PK did the same thing. He doesn't fit in to their little box.
No, but Chelios was also, he had more fun off ice, I think. And I think that created a bit of, a bit more stress on the situation.
Yeah.
I mean, don't know if it's the same with Subban.
Well, yeah, Chelios was an outlaw. A friend of mine was working at Dorval Airport at the time when it was still Dorval Airport. And he recounted a story to me about Chelios buying a new Porsche. Canadians had a road game. He parks it outside, no license plate on it, takes it straight from the dealer, puts on the hazard lights, and leaves it there for 3 days, right outside, you know, where you drop people off. And then he comes back after the road trip and just gets in the car and drives off. That's Chelios. I mean, it's like rules, laws, other people's wives.
Not applicable to him.
Yeah, those things don't mean anything, you know? But you know what? At the end of the day, you got to look at what's on the ice. I mean, you can't be giving up Norris trophy-winning defenseman every few years, but the fact of the matter is if the Canadians cannot find a place for him financially and if they want to try and change the way he plays on the ice, which it seems like they've been trying to do for the last few years, let him flourish somewhere else.
You know, earlier Mike Jerry from Snowden called in and was talking about how dreadful he felt that the Habs were going to be this year, and we were saying the same thing. He needs to sign. And it's funny that you would say that you would rather because there's been this lack of respect shown. I think this can still be repaired.
Yeah, then now's the time.
I don't think we're past the point
now.
Now's
the time.
But I will tell you, there will be such a backlash in the city if P.K. Subban ends up on the Maple Leafs or the Bruins or the Rangers.
Well,
like, if he's going, it better be to Columbus.
Well, this is the test of this GM, eh? I mean, this is going to define him one way or the other. And I don't know why it's taken to this point, because I think it's the wrong way for him to go on this so early in his career.
Posturing, I guess, right?
Yeah, that kind of posturing. Maybe, you know, save that for someone else. Don't save it for your 1-1A defenseman who's a young guy who wants to stay. I mean, really, is this the war that you want to be picking? I mean, if you saw that team Saturday night, you didn't, but, you know, that game was, the team was absolutely, whether they practiced, they didn't practice, Toronto had the same amount of time. The fact is,
right,
the Canadians were terrible. They had nothing going offensively for a long time. I mean, their penalty kill, their power play was anemic.
So you're just saying that they picked up where they left off?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I don't know what, I'm not sure what we were expecting differently. Just because we changed management, I'm not sure how that was going to be reflected on the ice.
Well, come on. We changed management last year. We saw how good that was, right?
Exactly. And so the fact is that you're missing one player who at least will entertain us and get us out of our seats once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, the Canadians approach it. I mean, the marketing is beyond brilliant, even though that torch stuff at the beginning just bored me to death and I thought it was over the top. But I mean,
well, nothing compares to the torch ceremony at the closing of the forum, right?
Well, exactly. So I'm not sure why they would want to resurrect that this year. But, I mean, I guess they're, you know, they're reaching out to the fans as best as they can. They have the concert outside.
The best thing that the Montreal Canadiens can do, Mike, is play upon their history.
Yeah.
You want to mention those 24 Stanley Cups as many times as you can.
Yeah.
Because what else do you have to build on? In the last, what can you possibly use to sell the Montreal Canadiens from the last 20 years?
I don't know.
The only thing would be Saku Koivu, and he's ripping it up in Anaheim right now.
Well, this is the most embarrassing thing, because even Jagr, with the way he started the season, mm-hmm. and Kovalev, I was like, this is horrendous. Now I'm going to see Gomez in San Jose.
I hope he does well, man. I hope he does so well.
Imagine this guy holding the trophy, the Stanley Cup trophy, and contributing to that team, you know, as he signs with San Jose. I'll be beside myself. But you know what? That's kind of the luck the Canadians have. So, anyways, we'll see. You know, tomorrow night's another night. We'll see how it goes.
I'm
yeah, let's see what Kovalev does to his former team tomorrow
night.
Yeah,
let's see how he lights us up.
Mike, thanks for the call, man.
Have a good evening, guys.
Great call as always.
Okay, goodbye.
Let's go to Ron in Montreal West. Hello, Ron.
Hi, guys.
How are you?
Oh, yeah, not too bad. Hi, Jay.
Hi, Ron. How are you?
I'm bad.
Good.
Not bad, I guess. Just a very quick little thing on Stacey May there.
Yeah.
A little there was some electricity between you and her.
Really? You found?
Oh, definitely.
Really?
Well, I mean, any girl that likes baseball, right?
Definitely,
I mean,
there was some electricity.
I think it may have only been on one side of that.
I could actually hear it coming through the radio. It was quite funny.
Wow.
I was laughing to myself.
Oh, that's
I was
going to
tweet you, but then I go, well, I don't want to get them all embarrassed.
No, no. You
no,
save
so
it
just say it live
week,
on the
right?
air.
Save
yeah.
it for next week, exactly.
I figure I'd save it for a while.
I will tell you this, though. Maybe it's something that I give off, but I feel like somebody says this every time we interview a female guest.
Like you were it's like you're simpatico, you know, both baseball fans.
Yeah, but you know what, Ron? I find that's not usually the best way to go when you're when looking for a relationship. You don't want someone that... You know, I don't want to date a girl that only likes baseball and the Tragically Hip. I already get to hang out with that person 24 hours a day. Me, Ron.
You're weird.
Oh, am I?
you're weird.
Well, that explains weird. The job and many other things, doesn't
you're
it?
Weird.
That does
you're real weird.
Well, on that note, what else is going on, man?
I mean, you know, rule one, okay?
Yeah.
Do things together.
Uh-huh.
Find things that you do together, because you won't have much time once you're doing your own things, okay, to spend time together.
Interesting.
And that's the way a couple can stay together, is if you have common interests and you do certain things together, that'll always keep you going. But if you get to the point where you're doing this, she's doing that, you don't have any commonalities, then...
Ron, this is, I gotta say, we...
You're listening to Dr. Ron on TSN.
No, like, what do you want? You know? Anyways, very quickly.
Yeah. I was gonna say this went from Oprah to Dr. Phil.
Well, you know me, I have a bizarre imagination. is there any ulterior motive to why this quarterback would need a girlfriend?
He was a linebacker, I believe, and
any reason why he would need a girlfriend?
Somebody
brought up
a point, Ron.
I think you know where I'm going with
to make her die.
No,
that she died.
No,
that's why he needs her.
No, it's about building up this story because it fits in with the Heisman Trophy.
No, right to play.
Right to play.
Yes.
What do you mean?
Is there an underlying reason that no one knows that he needed to have a girlfriend?
I see what you're saying, and you mean you can play, not
that's
right to play.
That's why his friends.
No, I don't think that's it at all.
I don't know.
I don't think that's it at all.
If,
you know what?
Yeah,
that
if
never
he was
going to
do that,
mind.
Why fictionally kill her off?
That never crossed my mind.
He would have kept her around if he had something to prove otherwise,
Ron,
he wanted to counter.
You're insinuating that he may be gay, and this was a way to cover up being gay, to pretend to have a girlfriend. I disagree. I think that's a bit of a reach, personally.
Well, put it this way.
Because he could just be single.
When,
he wouldn't have to have a girlfriend.
When people tell a girl who says she's been sexually attacked, okay, that you're going to dishonor Notre Dame if you report this, that's disgusting.
Yes, it is. But I don't think that can be turned into what you just insinuated. I personally don't think...
It's because it's the same school.
No, I know. And
if it was another school, I wouldn't, my mind wouldn't have gone there, but it's the same school, you know,
So you're saying you wouldn't be surprised if they pulled something like that off,
well,
is what
you're
saying.
Well, you're right, you know, you're gay, whatever, like they decide, well, why don't we have your girlfriend, you know?
Well,
yeah, she's far away, and...
yeah, but then why kill her off? That's the thing in the story.
Well, because sooner or later they're going to want to meet her.
Yeah, but you know what?
Sooner
I'll tell
or later
you're
going to want to meet her, right?
And again, I don't think that this is the right thing, but if this was the thing, there's no way, because...
You're the one that keeps on saying, do the math.
I'm sorry?
You're the one who says, do the math.
Well, okay, but I don't think that... I'm not... Never for a second did it cross my mind that Manti Te'o could possibly be gay and was using this to cover up
to try to hide his homosexuality. Yeah.
I don't I think that was it.
After Lance Armstrong, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like anything is possible.
Yes.
After you've seen what that guy could do.
But
know,
again,
like, that would be nothing to what Lance Armstrong did.
Apples and very different apples, I think, Ron.
No, but I mean, when you see the lengths that a person like Lance Armstrong would go to.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure, except that Lance Armstrong had everything, whereas Manta Te'o doesn't have anything yet.
Yeah,
this was done, and I'll tell you what, Ron.
But he wants things just like Lance Armstrong wanted things.
There's a video game that they were writing about on Deadspin that came out 5 or 6 years ago where you can it's a college football game, and you can take on, you create a player, and it's called Road to the Heisman Trophy. And the better that you play in this video game, the prettier your girlfriend gets.
Oh,
I swear to God.
I almost swear.
So you start off, and you're the quarterback for the University of Indiana, and you're dating a girl who has a piece of hay in her between her teeth.
Right.
And then it ends up that you're a finalist for the Heisman Trophy, and you're dating Miss Louisiana.
Yeah, now you know.
I think that this all fits in.
Ron, you know why I don't like Tom Brady.
Ron, thanks so much for the call, man.
Okay, bye.
Have a good night. I enjoy Ron's calls. I disagree with him on that. I don't think that. I mean, my God.
Well, there's no kind of indication of that.
Just the saddest thing ever.
Yeah.
But.
I mean, he is right in a way that I wouldn't put it past anybody to try that stuff. I mean, at this point, we've seen it all, haven't we? But there's no indication that that was the case whatsoever, and there's not even any kind of implication of that. So.
Man, do you know Oprah was in Canada tonight?
Was she?
She's in Edmonton being
with Phil Donahue.
Being interviewed by Strombo.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Kind of interesting that she's sitting in the other chair tonight.
What's she admitting?
I don't know.
What's she giving up?
What was she on when?
Yeah.
Other than the couch.
Yeah.
What were you on? The couch.
The couch.
Jay, I think that pretty much wraps up the Kaufman Show.
Is that it?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, that was quick.
I know. Time's fun when you're having flies.
What?
Kermit the Frog, man.
Okay.
Time's fun when you're having flies.
I don't know. Nothing post Jim Henson for me, please.
Thanks, Jay.
Thank you, Dave.
Thanks to Jimmy on the board and John Kakalakis for the updates and helping us out. And, of course, to our guests, Richard Deitch from Sports Illustrated and NFL veteran Thomas Jones. Two fantastic conversations tonight. And,
Yes, Chef Andrew, I will be your friend.
See, you listen to the show and you gain friends.
You lose some, too.
No, gain friends, lose followers.
Right.
I hope you enjoyed your new favorite radio show. We'll bring it next week again, we promise. I saw you bend in the early days. We all understand why you moved away. We'll hold a grudge anyway. I shot the shit with miniature Tim. If he needs a tune, then I'll write one for him. We like the same books and we like the same sounds. There's a reason that I love this town. I played a show in Kelowna last year. Said, pick it up, Joel. We're dying in here. Picture one hand clapping, then picture half that sound. There's a reason that I hate that town. You saw my band in the early days, then you understand why we moved away. You hold a grudge anyway, because it's fun. I
down in our soup, some French restaurant. I saw Riviere de Loup last night at the tour. We burnt the place to the ground. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town.
You've been listening to The Kaufman Show. For Jay Farrar, I'm Dave Kaufman, and we'll be back next week.
I don't know. What'd that sound like?